And the first thing I have to do is say, give a statement so you know what we're doing. So the key objective of this interview is to serve as a research tool to document memories of the American Chestnut. Information obtained in these interviews will be retained and made available for further use in efforts to promote a better understanding of the role of American Chestnut. Have you signed the participant identification and release agreements?
I have.
Okay, great. Now we're ready to roll. Maybe just start, tell us who you are, where you're from, just like background information.
Yeah. I'm Bill McDonald. I'm from Morgantown, West Virginia, and I'm a faculty member at West Virginia University, basically a microbiologist who works with diseases of trees.
So how long have you been involved with the Chestnut Foundation, and how did you get involved?
Well, I've actually been involved with Chestnut longer than with the foundation, but I was kind of drawn kicking and screaming into the Chestnut issue as a result of some discoveries that were made in France. And believe it or not, our legislature in West Virginia has a Forest Management Review Commission, and they had seen some science articles relative to recovering chestnuts in Italy. And they called a meeting of the committee, and they invited people from West Virginia to testify. And the first question I was asked, as being from the university, is what's West Virginia University doing about the chestnut problem? And a colleague of mine, the only answer we could give is nothing. And they immediately wanted to know why. And they were very generous in providing $10,000 to us back in the late 1970s to begin a research program. It wasn't long thereafter that our associate provost for research called me, and he said, "Bill, I've been getting more phone calls about chestnut than I care to answer." He says, "If this is such a great topic, why don't you have a symposium and see who comes?" So he said, "I will provide money for the university," and we talked the Forest Service out of money too. We had a symposium in Morgantown in 1978, which attracted almost 200 people from the United States, Canada, and we invited two speakers from Europe. And the rest we could say is history.
Okay.
I've been pretty intimately involved ever since.
Okay, cool. Well, do you have any sort of, I guess, since you've been involved with this whole chestnut issue for so long, is there any stories that stick out in your mind through the years?
Well, I think these stories aren't ancient stories like a lot of people have that grew up with living chestnut, but I can recall the first 2 weeks I spent as a new faculty member at West Virginia, my predecessor who had retired said, "Bill, maybe you can be willing to spend a week or so out with me and I'll show you some of the tree problems we have in the state." And we traveled and spent a good bit of time in West Virginia looking at a variety of things, and I can still remember, his name was Phil True. We're driving down a small country road that I would never have found again had circumstances not come to it, and we stopped and I said, "What's going on?" He says, "Well, I want you to see there's some American chestnuts." He pointed them out, and it was only the second time in my life I'd ever seen chestnut. Even though I grew up in Ohio, there were a couple trees on the Iowa State University campus. But anyway, Phil said, "Here's a tree that used to be a prominent part of West Virginia's history." And I wasn't hired at West Virginia University to work on chestnut, but I thought, well, okay, that's a curiosity. And everybody had pretty much given up on chestnut. It wasn't really on the research screen of anybody. And lo and behold, it wasn't that many years later than we kind of got pulled kicking and screaming into the issue. Now, the irony of the story was this very road, and it's a little town north on the West Virginia-Virginia border, the little road I drove down, and he showed me those trees. We now have fairly significant research plots along that road, as that is where there has been a good bit of cutting by the Forest Service, and there are remarkable populations of American chestnut. So that kind of was what comes around, goes around, comes around. And anyway, that was kind of an unbelievable coincidence for me. Yeah.
So did you have a lot to do with the fungus that infected the chestnut blight? Is that what you were talking about with the trees starting to recover in Italy?
Yes. Most of our research at West Virginia University and a lot of other institutions deals with the virus diseases that affect the fungus. So our interest stems primarily from biological control. And in that regard, obviously the Chestnut Foundation emphasizes breeding. We are looking at a different angle. And not that the two approaches aren't certainly compatible. Yeah. In fact, I think as we get further along with the breeding program and the work with hypovirulence, as this biocontrol is called, there may be ultimately a marriage of the two technologies.
Yeah, that was another thing I was wanting to ask folks. So here we are at this 25th anniversary meeting and like looking into the future. So are there any concerns that you have particularly, or kind of hopes or fears about the work that's going on?
I really don't have any fears about the work. I think one of the problems that we have faced, and I've faced almost weekly, is people think the whole process of restoration and the availability of chestnuts is here now. And I think we don't want to paint a picture that's less than optimistic, but we're probably decades away from really serious restoration efforts. And you'd hate for people to lose interest in the topic because there's not an immediate product. Biology just doesn't operate that way. So, no, I think we've made great progress, and I say that relative to the breeding program, which I'm very familiar with. I think it's remarkable how far we've come, but there's still a long way to go, and it's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So have you been a member of the Chestnut Foundation since the beginnings?
No, I basically was invited to go to Minnesota about a year after the foundation was formed. And the foundation was formed in Minnesota, and the group there was very interested in the back cross breeding program. But they asked me to come out and talk to them about what was going on with biological control using this phenomenon of hypovirulence. I went to the meeting, I remember it well, it was at the Minnesota Arboretum, and spent an hour describing what we knew about hypovirulence at the time. And at that meeting, they asked if I would be willing to join the board, because I think most of the folks that have been involved with the science of this whole issue know they need to embrace as many technologies as possible. So by inviting me, I suppose they brought another approach on board, and I've been with the foundation ever since.
You've been with the foundation for a long time. Are there any through the years or stories or memories you have about TACF particularly?
Well, in the early years, yes, we didn't have an executive director. We really didn't have any staff. It was strictly volunteer. And many of our early meetings were held in people's homes. They were very interactive meetings. We did a lot of planning. We had a number of people, mostly Minnesotans, who really, as I was told by several people when I asked why Minnesota, they said, well, Minnesotans are dew people. And many of those early meetings, we did a lot of planning, which we figured this was an easy issue to sell, and we could attract people to the chestnut topic because we had a real story to tell and a very critically important environmental issue. So we had plans within our first 3 or 4 years to have a $1.5 million budget and be off and running and be able to hire some professional people to help us. Well, that didn't happen. It took time. And, we're probably now, after 25 years, where we figured we'd be in about 3 years. And it's a great message, but a lot of people have forgotten chestnut as an issue, and they simply no longer have that contact. And we've seen interest kind of come and go. It depends a little bit on what the attitude of the nation is, and we're getting back a little bit more to the greening of America, and so we see an increased interest in topics like this.
Well, that's kind of all the questions I have. I was just keeping it loose, but is there any other things you want to
I think perhaps the one thing that's impressed me the most We have the American Chestnut Foundation, but we also have an independent group of researchers that functions under the auspices of USDA that represent about 8 different universities in the U.S., land-grant universities. And that research working group has been extremely interactive, very successful. We've won 2 national awards for our cooperative efforts to try to understand and exploit hypovirulence. That's been one of the more rewarding parts of my career, is to be able to work with colleagues from other universities toward a common goal. And that's what the foundation's doing too. It's just that this group is more directed toward biological control. So
the work that you've done directly related to this biological control of that particular fungus, have y'all had breakthroughs that have allowed, for instance, success with other problems as a result? I mean, obviously you haven't solved the chestnut problem, and obviously you're working towards that, but I mean, quite often research on one thing ends up benefiting a bunch of others. Has any of your research been breakthroughs for other folks and other?
That's a great question, and you know this system of hypovirulence, which actually is a virus diseases that affect the chestnut blight fungus. As a result of it's a very unique system, and as a result of some very sophisticated molecular work and understanding how these viruses operate and why they've been successful biological control, there's been a great effort to look for similar agents in other fungi. And, in fact, some of these viruses have been transferred in the laboratory to other organisms with the thought that maybe they would provide the same level of biological control. I think that's on the horizon. But like so much science, for many organisms, you know, nobody even thought about there being viruses in them, and using viruses to control them just hasn't been on the radar screen. Where now, I think it's brought an awareness that, hey, there's something here, and maybe there are other systems that are very similar that can be used to control plant pathogens.
Mm-hmm. What makes it so particularly difficult with this fungus? I mean, or is it just always that hard trying to find a viral remedy?
Well, I don't think we've really had too many opportunities known to us that are available to try to make something like this work. So we know it works. It's worked very successfully in Europe. We know the viruses have been very successfully there. Some areas of Michigan, there's remarkable levels of recovery among American chestnuts, again with the virus disease. And the problem has been, how do we exploit those viruses and make them work in the Appalachians? And that's what we're trying to understand. We have a lot of ideas, and I think we're probably on track to understand that.
A virus that works in the Midwest doesn't function the same way.
Exactly. Probably one of the major reasons we feel, and I think there's pretty good evidence for it, is the fungus where it occurs in Michigan has been introduced to small locales where chestnut is not native. And the strains of the fungus that infect chestnut in those small isolated pockets have very little genetic diversity. It's like introducing a new population, something anywhere.
Sure.
So the lack of genetic diversity has allowed those viruses to spread pretty rapidly through what is almost a clonal population of the fungus. Where in the Appalachians, we have a pretty diverse population of the fungus, and most organisms have natural barriers to diseases like viruses. So we find that it's oftentimes difficult to get the virus to transmit from
sort of
one
healthier system down here. Which
exactly. The fungus has those natural barriers to letting these viruses spread freely. So, yeah.
Well, that's all I've got. If there's anything else you want to add, throw in there?
No, without...
No.